It's great to be here again in person and this is our word, which, yeah, is maybe the best way to be taught. So it's really great to be here. So I want to tell you something about a joint work with my collaborators. So I will start with giving the number. This is the paper just on the archive on the Netherish equations on Lorentzian manifolds. So my collaborators are Eduardo Angelo.
So
who was that?
Not used to that. Okay. And myself, and the topic is generalized Netherish equations. On Lorentzian manifolds. Okay. So let me start with some motivation why we looked at this problem at all. So we wanted to be able to apply functional renormalization group methods in more general situations that people do it usually. So first of all, most of FRG is happening in Euclidean signature, and I'm of the opinion that the world is Lorentzian, so I prefer to work in that one. So FRG in Lorentzian signature. And when you're already there, you might wonder, well, can we do it on curved spacetime? Because usually people do it on a flat background, so we wanted to do it on curved background. And we also wanted to use more general states than just Minkowski vacuum, because there are other cool states. So in arbitrary states. And sort of long-term motivation of this program is to understand from that viewpoint asymptotic safety and be able to say something about existence of fixed points in various models. So dot, 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 asymptotic safety. Okay. So in this particular paper, we dealt only with the scalar field, but the gauge theories paper is close to being finished, so hopefully we'll be able to put it on the archive soon. Okay, so I'm going to start with sort of outlining the framework I'm working in, which maybe you're not so familiar with, which is perturbative algebraic quantum field theory. People who know me, they know I talk about it all the time, but it doesn't mean that it all sticks. So let's try to review that.
There's another one
here. Okay, so I'm going to use this stick. Let's see how it works. No. Or I use Bianca. Thank you, Bianca. Good to have friends. this is this is discriminating against short people. Okay, so perturbative AQFT. So let me just give you the basics first. So all this AQFT business, it's algebraic approach to quantum field theory. So the idea is that you assign to regions of your spacetime algebras, hence algebraic. So, okay, so usually this is going to be some star algebra of observables. But in perturbation theory, that's too much to ask. So we actually have formal power series in such algebras. And yeah, you can add more adjectives, so you can do things in a derived way, you can have chain complexes, blah, blah, blah. So you can make these algebraic structures more interesting, but the key thing is that, well, the whole information is contained in these algebras. So there is a sort of separation between thinking about observables and thinking about states, which comes later. And this is why this is going to be useful for us. And well, just for completeness, there are two axioms that usually are required. So one is isotony. So if you have inclusion of two regions, then you have the inclusion of the two algebras. And the other one, which is the most important one, in my opinion, is the causality. So you have commutation of observables, which are assigned to regions that are space-like separated. So this means space-like separated, so no causal curve connecting them. So this is space-like. Oh, and this should be then equal to zero. So commutation of operators assigned to space-like regions. Okay, so that is a very sort of crush.
Yeah?
Perturbative?
Yeah, why? I mean, what is perturbative?
Oh. This one. But so this is perturbative because we have formal power series in H-bar. Formal meaning that it's not actual.
Sorry, maybe I'm...
Yeah.
So explaining your observable in power series, what is...
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, right. So perturbative, it means that I can only compute, like, various sort of corrections in H-bar, okay. Right? To, you know, my observables are these series in H-bar, but they don't converge to anything, okay. Right? So if I would be able to say that the series converges, then I would have non-perturbative version of things. But this is fine because that's quantum field theory. You know, most quantum field theory is actually perturbative. You know, we compute those Feynman diagrams and some things up and so on, but typically, we don't, you know, worry about the convergence of the big series in H-bar. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Formal coupling, so H-bar, lambda, whatever else you want.
Sure, of course, yes. I haven't mentioned the coupling yet, so that's why I didn't say it, because it wouldn't make sense. Okay, so let me, that was the best way. Should I could use this. Okay, and then forget about it. So let's do that. I'm going to use this. So this is algebras, and I should also tell you what the states are. So a state is a positive normalized functional. So I have omega from my algebra to complex numbers. And then, well, from that I can actually, so this is then star algebra. Okay, and from that I can construct a Hilbert space representation because people like Hilbert spaces. So there is a construction called GNS, which produces from a state like that, a Hilbert space representation. Okay. So this is the general setup, so algebra states. Now I want to tell you how we construct actual models and then introduce a few structures, a few things that are needed for me to formulate the flow equations. So the goal of this talk is to get to the point where I can write down the algebraic version of the flow equations. But this is yet to come. So let's start with constructing models. I need some input from physics. So, yes?
By a positivity for formal series.
Yeah, so this is very silly because it just means that the zero of order term has to be positive.
So
it's very weak. It's a very weak notion of positivity. I mean, there are some others, like another sensible notion of positivity would be that it can be written as, say, A star A for two other elements of the algebra. That's also, I mean, that's a positivity for the algebra.
Yeah, so technically you can only guarantee that the Hilbert space exists for the zeros order.
Yeah, and then the rest is sort of like perturbative. Yeah, so it's, but yeah, actually, in the end, we only need a Hilbert space representation for the free theory, which is guaranteed to exist. So, and then the rest is just building on top of that. So that's actually not a big problem there. Okay, so we need to specify a spacetime M, and I want this to be globally hyperbolic, meaning M is just some Cauchy surface cross R. A lot of good spacetimes are of this sort. There is the configuration space. So this is what you would call space of fields, which is, well, the space of objects that you want to study. So for the scalar field, we have that E is just smooth functions on M valued in R. Okay, but it could be other stuff. Then there is dynamics. I have to specify dynamics, and for that we use some version of Lagrangian formalism. So this is using Lagrangians. This also makes sense. And okay, so this is the basic setup. And we start with the free theory, and then we are going to introduce interaction perturbatively. So for the free theory, everything always starts with the free scalar field. That's how mathematical physics works. So my free Lagrangian is going to be I0. I will denote my field by chi, because I want to use phi for something else. And this is our known friend, the Lagrangian of the free scalar field. Okay. It can be non-minimally coupled if we want with the Ricci scalar chi squared. There is a mass term. And maybe something particular to this formalism, we usually introduce cutoff here. So F is smooth, compactly supported function. And I will denote these guys by D. And we need that cutoff as a sort of auxiliary object, but I'm going to remove it any minute now. So just so I can write it down. Okay. So starting with classical theory, I will never see this again. Starting with classical theory.
Can I ask a question? If you put this cutoff function f, then the null operators are no longer formally self-adjoint. Is this a problem or?
No. No. It's not.
Okay.
Depends what you want. I mean, it's just a Lagrangian density with a cutoff.
You might get infinity for this, and that's crazy, so you have to regularize things, but then you take it away.
As I said, infinity is a problem. Now, you see, because M is not compact, and it cannot even be compact, because if M is compact, then you cannot be globally hyperbolic, so there is a problem. So, that's just life. But things are not terrible. So, for example, equations of motion don't depend on that cutoff, and this is how I define them. So, I define the following object, which is the Euler-Lagrange derivative of I0, and this is defined as taking derivative of this guy of chi for some f in the direction of psi, and here is where I get rid of this. So f is identically 1 on the support of psi, and psi is compactly supported, so everything makes sense. Now this, oh, my chalk is there, for God's sake. That works, okay. Life is hard. It's good I have a big stick. Okay, so what I want to say, this guy here, this is a one form on the space of configurations, and this is what defines me the equations of motion. So di0 of chi equals 0, these are the equations of motion. And in particular, for our case there, you can compute what it is. So this is actually given in terms of a differential operator P0, which is our known friend, Klein-Gordon. Don't go. Stay with me. Minus psi r. Okay. There are good things about this guy. Stay. for example, so this has very, very nice Green functions. Okay, and these are delta retarded and delta advanced retarded / advanced Green functions. And what does it mean? It means that if we have, well, a compactly supported guy, apply to this delta retarded, then the support is going to go to the future, and support of delta A of F is going to the past. So this is what's special about them. Some significance to the story. And I define something called Pauli-Jordan function, which is the difference between the two. And okay, I can finally say what's classical theory for me. So in classical mechanics, I teach classical mechanics, so I should better know, we have the canonical bracket for observables, for the space of observables. Here we also have some sort of a structure like that. We have a Poisson bracket. So FG are observables, and I define their Poisson bracket by taking their derivatives and contracting it with this guy. Okay. So at this point, I should probably tell you what F and G are supposed to be. So let me free some space. So here, F, G are local functionals on E. So we say that F and G are in F log. Okay, and if you want to, well, I wrote their derivatives, so they should better be differentiable. In fact, they are even smooth. So I'm working with classical observables that are actually smooth functions of fields. So that's the first step. And since I'm already at it, I should probably introduce other classes of functionals, so I can refer to them later. More generally, we can have F microcausal. So these are more singular functionals. Okay, and you have F regular, which is less singular functionals. So functionals such that all derivatives are smooth. So all derivatives at all points are smooth. Okay. I will leave this here for future reference and say send this guy up because it wants to go.
Okay.
I hope it's visible. Part of, yeah. I don't think it, it's not stable in the intermediate configuration. Okay, so that's the setup for the classical theory and free quantum theory. So this is more chalk. This is kind of building on the idea of deformation quantization. So there has been some talk about deformation quantization already, so that you're familiar with this idea. So yeah, I want to introduce a non-commutative product on these observables so that this bracket is kind of the commutator for that product. And yeah, so this is done as follows. So I will take this causal propagator, sorry, this Pauli-Jordan function, which is like the Poisson structure in my story, and then add some sort of symmetric term to this. So this is symmetric. Okay, so that this guy now is, well, I mean, delta was a bisolution for our equations of motion operator, right? Because it's a different difference between two Green functions. This I still want to be a solution. So it's a bisolution for P0. This extra bit is symmetric. And the important part for people who care about functional analysis is the wavefront set of this guy. So has some nice singularity structure. So for people who care, this is the wavefront set condition. Okay, and yeah, there is a name for this kind of a guy. So I would, well, people would call it Hadamard function if, well, the appropriate wavefront set condition is fulfilled. So this is Hadamard function. Okay, so I quantized the free theory. This is very boring. Now, what I can do now, okay, so this is a sort of algebra. I can find now states, and I can compute endpoint functions of that theory. Yes?
Blackboard is out of the...
Oh, yes, sorry, forgot about that. Yeah, so I will just erase these two. Okay, this is a good time for a break, so if people want to ask questions. Go ahead. Okay. Any questions up to this point? All right. Hope to get to something more interesting. Interesting things are starting. So computing endpoint functions. So let's say we have omega state for this free algebra. And then I consider the following. So phi of x is evaluation functional. So phi of x applied to chi spits out chi of x. It's a functional. I can insert it into my state. So what I can compute, for example, is this state evaluated on the product of n such functions. Sorry, yeah, such functionals. So you can think of these guys as field operators. So these are field operators. Okay, so I can compute what that is, and this is then computing the endpoint function for that state. So endpoint function. Okay, so I have the prescription for doing that. And there is a particularly nice state. So there is omega zero, which applied to a functional gives the value of that functional at zero. So I can also compute endpoint functions for that. And in particular, omega zero two, so the 2-point function of that guy of x1, x2 is this delta plus. Delta plus of x1, x2, which kind of motivates, well, this whole story. So I take this object with these properties as an input, and then for this very natural state, this state is Hadamard, and this is a 2-point function of a Hadamard state. So this state is Hadamard. Okay, and this is more or less the scope of, say, generality we can achieve. So we can work for essentially arbitrary Hadamard states, but this is a simple example of Hadamard state that we can write down very quickly. So we had endpoint functions. There is also the question, well, about Green functions, and this has something to do with time-ordered products. So the next thing I want to introduce is the time-ordered product. So let's see how I want to do this, maybe like this. So just to check, how much time do I have at this point?
Half an hour.
Cool. That's good. That's very good. So time-ordered product, and this is related to introducing interaction, because everybody can do free theory. So I'm adding to my free Lagrangian an interaction term, which, well, for the sake of this story, I want to consider polynomial interactions. There is the coupling constant, finally, n over n squared, so polynomials times some cutoff and integrated over the whole space. So this is the kind of like phi to the fourth, phi cubed, other phis. Okay, and to make sense out of that, I want to construct something called the local S matrix. So this is going to not only encode some information about this interaction, but very explicitly I can construct interacting fields using that and compute interacting Green functions. And in the end, that will also allow me to write down the flow equation, which is the sort of end result of this story. Okay, so first thing I need, I want to introduce the Feynman propagator . Okay, so this is very similar to that delta plus guy. There is a sum of delta retarded and delta advanced plus this symmetric term. And now, naively, in quantum field, there's a question from the...
So, I have a question.
Hi.
I ask about this interaction term, doesn't have singularity or not?
Oh, yes, it will. Just wait 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yes, yes, I was about to get to that. Yeah, so this is the Feynman propagator. So now, a naive time-ordered product naive time ordered product. Sorry. I think somebody should have stopped me. For example, Eli, who is always careful about these things. I did not really define the star product here. I should have. I almost got there. So F star G, I said that in words, but I didn't write it down. So it's a multiplication composed with H bar, and then you take the powers of the operator where you differentiate. Sorry, this should be chi. Tensor D over D chi F tensor G. Sorry about that. So the star product here is the exponential product with respect to this, essentially two-point function of a Hadamard state. And now the time-ordered product is going to be, the naive time-ordered product is going to be the exponential product, h bar, with respect to the Feynman propagator. Okay. Chi d over d chi f tensor g. Okay. Now, before I say how badly it fails, let me say, so I could also probably want to compute n-fold time-ordered products if I want things like, time-ordered endpoint functions. So this would just be the n-fold time-ordered products of these guys. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Well, the Feynman propagator has singularities. So this expression is only well-defined if the supports of all these functionals are disjoint. So is defined on Fi local. We are interested in local guys. If supports are all disjoint. Well, that's unfortunate. So this naive formula will not work. We have to use something different, and this is where renormalization comes in. So usually one doesn't discuss this in the context of RG flow. So here, just to spoil a bit what's going to come, we are going to use a local regulator, which means that we still have to solve the UV problem separately from the IR problem, which is going to be solved by the cutoff that we implement by the IR regulator. But we don't use a UV regulator. We need to solve this problem using renormalization. This is maybe one of the main differences. So let's try to pull this down and see if it stays. And this is where I'm going to appeal to Epstein-Glaser renormalization, which is a completely separate topic for a talk. So I'm not going to go into much detail. So solution, Epstein-Glaser renormalization. So this is inductive procedure to define those TNs. And there is an important property that they have to satisfy, which is actually the key for this to work, which is causal factorization property. And I'm going to give it a label because it's important. Okay. So it says that if I have a bunch of functionals, let's say f1 to fn, such that f1 to fk are not earlier than fk plus 1 to fn. And but not earlier than that, I mean in the sense of support. And we have causal structure, future, past, so we can make sense out of that. In the sense of support, okay? Then this guy factorizes nicely with k star t, nope, that's okay. That's n minus k, f k plus 1 to f n. Okay. So building on that, I construct, well, I don't. Epstein Glaser have constructed, I'm just using their stuff. I can use their stuff to construct these Tn's. And actually, even more, let me now pull down the other board. It's working. Okay, so this is fun with renormalizations. So I can construct, well, T itself, and also map T such that F time ordered G is even in terms of the pointwise product by applying this map. This map actually has some nice physical interpretation, or okay, what passes for physical? So this is related, so this is the renormalized path integral. So this is formally the convolution with Gaussian measure. Stop. Of the free theory. Okay, so formally T applied to F evaluated at zero would be the path integral of F of chi, and now the Gaussian measure would be here I zero of chi, the quadratic action, and then d chi. So this guy is nothing else but renormalized path integral. And if you like path integrals, you can keep that formula in mind because this is going to be useful for future reference. Okay. So I can compute the green functions. Okay, so these are gn of x1 to xn is, again, I start with some state as above, omega, but now instead of taking star products of my field operators, I take time-ordered products of field operators. Okay, these green functions have a generating function, and this generating function is the local S matrix. So, local S matrix. So, this is the time ordered exponential. So, S of F is the time ordered exponential I over h bar f. Okay, so far so good. And now finally, I can construct the interacting fields.
For a layman, when you say local S matrix, what is that? What would that mean to me? Like as a just a QFT standard one?
So this interaction here has a cutoff. In the ideal world, you can take the limit of that cutoff going to be one everywhere, and then that would give you the S matrix, the actual S matrix.
So I think of it as like correlated with the boundary of a region that's defined by the cutoff, or you don't want to do it.
Yeah, well so this is all, yeah, so this is all truncated. So this is all, you know, considered in the bounded region. So but it is related to the actual S matrix. But in order to get like the scattering theory, you need to like take the limit of this cutoff going to infinity. But yeah, it's interesting that yeah, these guys actually make sense also locally, and they have like, you know, you can compute correlations, right? Locally, because you compute correlators between points, and the points are at finite distance, right? So you can use that to compute correlators of interacting fields, which is what I'm going to get to now. So there is something called relative S matrix. Okay, and so for interaction S V, for interaction V, this might look somewhat familiar. So V plus F. Okay, so we take the inverse here and start with V sort of perturbed by F. And there is the Bogoliubov formula for the interacting field. So we first define the Bogoliubov or Miller operator, RV of F. This is the derivative of this guy. So D over D mu at mu equals zero, SV of mu F. And explicitly, this is SV minus one star, and here I have SV time ordered F. So this is all very cool because, this is something I can use to essentially compute interacting observables. And in particular, I can take my basic field. So RV of phi x is the interacting field. Okay. And I can compute correlators. So first of all, okay, so these are the interacting fields. I can compute the interacting product. So F star V G. This is given by a sort of another deformation of the product. So now from free to the interacting. Okay, so now interacting correlation functions are given in terms of an interacting state. So everything is now with a V. Omega V is my free state composed with RV. This is interacting state. State, so I can finally write these down. Okay, so so we take the interacting state and evaluate it on the interacting product of my field operators. okay, which is actually the same using these definitions as a free state evaluated on interacting fields. Okay, this is important. Okay, so
sorry, that's
the interacting correlation function. Yes.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
So as you say, all these constructions are homomorphic.
Yes.
You didn't say anything about the algebraic singularities.
No.
So I suppose you're okay. So you said you appeal to
It has nothing to do with singularities. The formality. I mean, singularities have been taken care of by Epstein and Glaser. So these time-ordered products are not singular anymore.
Yeah. But I thought this Epstein-Glaser business only works for a normalizable view. Well,
no, that's not true.
You can put any interaction, it always gives you something.
Correct. I mean, the obstructions could be in the existence of anomalies. For gauge theories, there could be obstructions to quantizations which come from anomalies. But other than that, like, you can renormalize almost everything.
But how do you see then the non, you know, that there should be a huge ambiguity and so on? I don't see
it. No, it doesn't. Well, there is ambiguity. I'm just not talking about it. There is ambiguity in constructing these TNs. So for renormalizable theories, you have finitely many parameters. And for non-renormalizable theories, you have finitely many parameters at each order, but overall, you might have infinitely many parameters. So that's how you see it.
Yeah, so where are they hidden? Or are you going to talk about those? Or?
Oh, I'm not going to talk about those at all. Yeah, no, they're hidden in those TNs. We can talk about them later, but it's actually not like really crucial to what I want to say. But they are there. Let's talk about it later. I think I have 15 minutes left or even less.
Ten.
Okay, yeah, so definitely not time to talk about this. All right, so there is also the time-ordered version. And for that, it turns out that the time-ordered product for this, so the time-ordered product is the same as the time-ordered product for the star. So this is the time-ordered version again. So green functions okay, so this is then omega v, so omega composed with rv evaluated on the time-ordered product of the basic field operators. Okay. So this guy is the interacting Green function. All right, so at this point, finally, maybe I come to the situation where we connect to randomization group flow language, at least. So now I want to, give the generating functional for those. And this is what our notation is called Z, which is then analogous to what people usually use in RGF. So Z of J, so J would be like dual things, is then defined as omega evaluated at SV of J. It's another J, sorry, capital J, which is given just by the integral of some fixed J, which is a source, right? So this is a source. Okay, so this couples the field to the sources. And this is nothing else as omega of RV applied to S of J. So this is then the generating functional. Functional. For these green functions. Okay, so that's our Z, and from here, so this is by this is in general. Now we want to introduce the IR cutoff to the theory. Let's see, and let's do it here. Okay, so let's see, IR regulator. So that is QK is -1/2. It's essentially going to be a mass term. So there is some local function, and here I take the field square dx. So the IR regulator is essentially adding a mass, and then I define everything is essentially now modified by adding this QK. So I0K is my old I0 class QK. So dot dot dot, so everything you can, you know, run the machinery again. So ZK of J is now omega of SV minus 1 star S of V plus J plus QK. And now we can study how this whole thing depends on K. So this is how the flow equations are going to flow. So the usual story, we define WK of J as minus log of ZK. And we take Legendre transform. So what they call gamma tilde of some new variable phi is K W K of J phi minus J phi of phi, where this is a solution to d W over D J at J equals J phi equals phi. So this guy is then called the classical field. Okay, so you can express everything now in this transformed version as functions of the classical field. Okay, I have almost everybody there. Just need a couple more equations. Let's see. Let me start with that one. How much time do I have?
5 minutes.
It requires a lot of exercise. Okay. So I'm not going to give you a full derivation because the time is short and you can always read the paper. Let's see. So I think I should define one more guy. So that was that. Okay, so the effective action, average effective action. Okay, so this is gamma k is that I have on the other board minus qk of I. Everything is now expressed in terms of the classical field. And finally, I can write down the generalized Wetterich equations. Equation. Okay, so this k is going to be the parameter I differentiate with respect to. So I consider a differential equation in k. So d gamma k of phi, short calculation, I have the following result. So d k qk of x, it's going to be a long formula. And here I have 1 over z because we differentiate an exponential. And now inside the state, we have still rv and we have s of all these guys plus qk. So this extra stuff. And now time ordered with something which is normal ordered version of chi squared of x. Ouch. Need more chalk. One bracket, another bracket, one more bracket, minus phi squared of x. Close the bracket. Okay, so you won't believe me, but that's the Wetterich equation. So that is the ansatz, one could say. So this is what we consider as our main object, so the flow equations in our formalism. Now, this doesn't look like anything that you have probably seen. So let me just try to break it down and try to argue that this is more familiar than you think. So first of all, this fellow here, let's see, that whole thing together with chi squared. Well, again, this is a calculation, but you can show that this comes from the second derivative of WK with respect to J's. Okay, plus some extra term with first derivatives. Okay, and these, by definition of what we got from the Legendre transform, evaluated at j equals j phi, give phi. So from these terms, they are going to cancel phi squared. And another fun fact is that this second derivative is actually an inverse of gamma k plus qk. So this is an inverse of gamma k, well, the derivative of gamma k plus qk here with respect to phi's. Okay. So putting all this information together, I can now rewrite things in a form which you might find more familiar. And that will be the end.
Sorry, aren't you taking the limit where x and y are equal?
Sorry, what are you doing?
You're taking the limit where x and y are equal, right? Together.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Fast and loose. Yeah.
Singularities?
No. I'm really good with singularities. you would never see a singularity intimidate me.
Like every question is like, is there a
there is no problem. No, you see, grew up with singularities, I know how to deal with them. Let me comment about it in a minute. I just want to manage to write down the final equation in the prescribed time. Here we are. Okay, so with these things, and okay, I'm being a bit fast and loose, but assuming that you're comfortable with your functional analysis, this is then some. Okay, so here we have some normal ordered version of this minus one. So that's the second derivative of, which I had in the left-hand side corner. This is normal ordered with respect to some integral kernel, which is implicitly determined. But yeah, implicitly determined. Okay, so that looks more like a Wetterich equation. Thank you for the question, because this is actually a very important point here. So we get that expression as a sort of consequence of the formula we have above. Now, normal ordering happens as a sort of, if you compute these time-ordered products, then time-ordered products with one argument are normal ordered quantities. So normal ordering is a part of the construction of these time-ordered products. So you first take care of the singularities in one argument, so normal ordering, and then you take care of singularities in higher order. But this is actually all automatically implemented in the way you define things. So that expression is actually a priori well defined, and then you can then plug in these various pieces and write it down as this thing, which, well, resembles closely the Wetterich equations with the normal ordering, because we didn't introduce the UV cutoff. Okay, so I think that's all I wanted to say, and thank you very much for your attention.
Let's start by students, if you have a question.
Yeah. So I noticed that you renormalized by kind of smearing with the free theory, the Gibbs kernel theory, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm just wondering if we can like just put in like Chen Simons term or something where you have like instantons inside.
You, in terms of like functionals, right, you can put in whatever you want as an interaction tab. The question of how nice it is a secondary question. But I mean, you can put any local terms into the machinery. Now, with Chen Simons, obviously, I mean, with Gish theories, you have to be slightly more careful because you have to make sure that you don't have anomalies. So there is this whole like DV story, which I haven't spoken about because it's all free to you. Well, it's all scalar fields, so didn't have to worry. But when we do gauge theories, we have to use the BV formalism of quantum master equation and like extra constraint on this flow, for example, coming from that. Other than that, there is a machinery, you turn the crank and see what happens. And if you know Chern Simons from like Kevin's point of view, for example, this is very similar but Lorentzian. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Have you compared your Wetterich equation with actual computations of scalar fields of
uh-huh.
Wetterich equation? And if yes, and if that works, how huge would be the step to apply your framework to tensor fields and
Thank you for the question. So in the paper, we did the computation, obviously, for the vacuum state on Minkowski, just to see if this gives the same result as the usual Wetterich equation. It does. And then we also did a computation on the sitter in Bunch-Davis vacuum, and we did a computation on Minkowski in a thermal state. So we did the standard thing plus like two extensions, which actually show like new effects. And currently we are working on the paper with gauge theories, and unless we find some new mistakes, it should all go through with extra constraints coming from gauge invariants. So yeah, it can be applied to other fields as well.
Anyone?
I think I want to answer Harold's question because we have some. It's not a long answer, but well, at least it's a start. So you mentioned these ambiguities, and this is an excellent point. So if I say have two time ordered products that are legit and satisfy all the Epstein-Glaser axioms, I can construct two S matrices, with these two products. Okay, so there is a thing called main theorem of renormalization, which tells me, aha. So first of all these ambiguities in construction of T's are governed by a renormalization group in the sense of Stückelberg-Petermann. So there is a group of maps Z which go from local functionals, formal, to local functionals, formal in H bar. And there is the main theorem, which says that, for T and T tilde, that are both legit time ordered products, there exists Z such that this guy here, so the tilde one is the old one, but when you precompose with Z. Sorry for the collision of notation, that's a different Z. So these renormalization group elements intertwine between different definitions of the time ordered product. So now to the question of renormalizability, this is a group. It's an actual group. You have group action of Z on these S matrices. And then you can ask yourself, well, for a given V, is my orbit under this action finite dimensional? If it is, theory is renormalizable. If it's not, it isn't. So that's the good way of saying this.
Can I ask a question? So say I have two T's, but one of them really isn't the time, and I just tried to foliate my spacetime with a weird slicing. Like,
oh.
To what extent can I?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. So this is very particularly kind of linked to this causal structure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, I mean, time is maybe a bit iffy. But so you can, let's see, it doesn't really depend on a particular foliation, but it has to respect causal structure. So what you want to keep track of is how things behave, say with particular, causal ordering. So what it says, the defining definition is that F time order G is equal to F star G if F is later, but later could be like that. Right? Not earlier, actually. So F not earlier than G, they could be space-like, they could be null. Well, I mean, there's not much room to be null, but, I just need to be able to separate them by a Cauchy surface.
Okay.
Yeah?
So what, do you need a Cauchy surface or not? Because you start from, so you start from Euclidean case, and then now you're going to Lorentzian, and definitely want
to... No, my start pro... Well, this is all Lorentzian.
Yeah.
So I have these star products are kind of given, and then I want time of the product so that they respect this causal ordering. But the causal is kind of broad, right? I mean, I have just the light cones and the causal structure. So it doesn't, it doesn't depend on a particular foliation.
But how much does if I try to go from a Lorentzian space into a 2-2 signature space? I mean, if I just really don't, like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, you can, well, there is a version of that for Euclidean signature, for example. So there is a version of this story where instead of time-ordered products, you have Euclidean products. Yeah. And then, well, it's kind of different. I mean, the important relation is disjointness rather than being separated. So, yeah. But, yeah, so it doesn't really depend on the foliation, but it does depend on the causal structure. That's, I think, the bottom line.
Maybe a last question is the last one.
Yay.
I'm not so familiar with this algebraic framework. So my vague recollection of the battery equation is they put some kind of a cutter function in momentum space.
Yeah, Yes, yes.
How do you recognize this in your thing? Because you're already done.
Sure.
So can you just explain how?
Yeah, so there's a nice trick. I used a very particular regulator, but you can also do it for non-local regulator. Let's see. So, like, what I did with those J's, right? J of chi. So this is like taking Fourier transform. Right, so if I have this S of J plus QK, what is it? It's the time-ordered exponential of I over H bar, and then you have this like Fourier transform bit plus QK. So you're working like, but by introducing these sources, you're kind of introducing a Fourier transform, and then like if you write down your formula for, you know, adding the regulator to the path integral, you can translate it to this S matrix story. So let me just maybe write down one more. So this, yeah, so if I evaluate it at zero, okay, this would be the same as the path integral. And now I have also my original action plus now this J plus QK. So this is like regularized measure D chi. So I think for mathematicians in the room, this is formal. But like changing this argument of the S matrix is like adding things to my measure. So this step corresponds to regularizing the measure. I mean, we really followed the original paper of Petrovich very closely in terms of actual formulae. So, but what do you want to think about this? Well, we gave a different interpretation, like a new sort of formulation of these flow equations, which you can think of them as sort of making, well, the old ones suitable also for general space times. The old ones work fine, but this is just more general and it reduces to the old one. So.
Alessia.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I got probably got lost in the middle of in various steps. But so you started with the formalism of algebraic quantum field.
Yeah, correct.
Is perturbative.
Yes.
Assume that the series sum up and so
yes,
and non perturbative. But then you arrive at the electric equation that is non perturbative in spirit, so it is thought to be applicable also to non perturbative
yeah.
systems. So when the transition happened?
Well, yeah. So I was being a bit, you know, generous with perturbation series. Yeah. So the rigorous derivation of what I wrote works only perturbatively. However, the end result, so to say, is non-perturbative. So what you can, yeah. I mean, there are steps which at the moment we don't know how to do non-perturbatively. But I would say in principle, they should be done non-perturbatively in the ideal world. So yeah, I think, well, the hope is to actually use these methods to get non-perturbative results in PAQFT and get rid of the P in PAQFT.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for the invitation.